Welcome, everybody, to Understanding Climate Finance, the podcast by the Canadian Trade Commissioner Service. My name is Fahim Nurali. I'm the Climate Finance Trade Commissioner based out of the Embassy of Canada in Washington, D.C. I'm really pleased today to have Peter Mokel as our guest. Peter is a senior industry specialist for embedded systems with IFC's Climate Business Department. In this role, he leverages his prior experience as a CTO with a Berlin-based startup that focused on smart electricity metering, as well as a variety of other experiences across the world to advise IFC on grid-scale energy storage, which battery storage plus, is the way I like to put it, as well as smart utility meters, building management systems, and lighting systems. Peter was actually really instrumental, and his expertise informed World Bank's 2018 commitment of $1 billion for a new global program to accelerate investment in battery storage for energy systems in developing and middle countries. This initiative also looks to actually leverage $4 billion from the private sector for the same purpose. I've had the pleasure of working with Peter both while I was at IFC and now as a Climate Finance Trade Commissioner. So thank you, Peter, for joining us.
Thanks for having me, and good to see you again, Fahim.
Yeah, good to see you too. So could you explain to me why energy storage is so important to the World Bank Group and to other development banks for developing countries overall?
Yes, and it always comes down to one thing. We want to see more renewable energy on grids, more wind, more solar energy. And as you add more of that, eventually you need some batteries to accommodate it. Because first, when you add solar and wind to a grid, it just is absorbed by it. But as you add more, as the sun will not shine at night and the wind will not always blow, you need to store your energy when you can get it and then use it when you need it. And that's where energy storage comes in. So in itself, it doesn't generate anything, but it helps the grid to have more solar and wind. And my colleagues sometimes ask me, Peter, what's the level? What's the threshold? Do 20%, 30%, 40% renewable energy? And unfortunately, the answer is it depends. Depends a bit on how good the grid is. Is it interconnected or not? But eventually, every grid will need batteries to accommodate more renewable energy. And that's why we want to finance batteries, so we can add more renewables.
Great. I got actually two follow-up questions to that. The first one would be of particular interest to our industries in Canada. Can you just describe how important mining for critical minerals is for energy storage?
It's always a critical point in that first of all, the good thing is nature has given us a number of different material combinations from which you can build an anode and a cathode in a battery. So the good news is there's not a single material that we need to build batteries. We can always work around constraints. On the other hand, the industry has for the time being settled on lithium ion batteries. And the clue is in the name. You need a lot of lithium for lithium ion batteries. And then in addition, you need cobalt and or nickel for them. So that's currently where the critical bottleneck is, lithium, cobalt, and nickel. But the industry always finds a way to work around that. So any constraint will always be temporary because you can change your composition of your battery and then eventually work around constraints. In the longer run, there's a chance that vanadium will be critical if low batteries ever take off. And then beyond that, towards the end of the decade, we may have totally new chemistries coming into the market where other materials may become important.
Great. Can you just outline some innovations that you're seeing in energy storage? You talked about it a little bit here about what's coming in the future, but what are you the most excited about when you look at different profiles?
That's a good question. I'm an engineer. I'd love to talk technology, but really in batteries, amateurs talk technology and professionals talk financing. So I need to constrain myself a bit. The one important part is that for now we have lithium ion. That's not perfect, but it's good enough. And we just need to make that cheaper. I think that's the roadmap for the next 5 years. We have a working technology, and the innovation will be in relentlessly making it more efficient, making the manufacturing cheaper. But then, you know, maybe towards the middle or the end of the decade, we run out of roadmap to actually make it cheaper and hit some fundamental constraints. And then it'll be interesting again, because then we need to look for new technologies beyond that. And one candidate is solid state batteries, where we don't deal with liquids or gels anymore in the electrolyte. That may be ready in 5 years for mass production. And then the other big innovation area is what we call long duration storage. And this is arguably a little bit of a market failure, that all of the capital today goes into making lithium ion better, and we need that. But eventually, we'll also need storage, not just for 4, 5, 6 hours, for which lithium ion is good, but for 24/7. We want 24/7 firm renewable energy. And for that, we need what we call long-duration storage. And that's a total zoo out there. There's still 10 different technologies that could conceivably fill that role. There's flow batteries, compressed air, liquid air, mechanical storage, even hydrogen. When you think about it, an electrolyzer and a fuel cell together act like a battery, and you could use hydrogen for that. And that's a technology investor's dream, because you can pick and choose your technology from a number of candidates, but it's also still a high risk from an investor perspective. So that long duration game has yet to be decided.
So when investment officers, or you work with investment officers that are looking at energy storage projects, what are special considerations that you have to take into account when you're looking at developing countries, both in an urban setting and in a rural setting where you may have off-grid energy?
Yes. So on the grid side, we try to make an energy storage project look as much like a solar or wind project as possible. So we can bring the financing products we have for project finance and renewables to bear here. So we want standardized PPAs, for example, standardized contracts that look the same everywhere. When you look at a solar project today, it looks the same whether it's in Latin America or in Asia. They're always the same contracts. We need to get to a point where storage projects have the same contracts, so we don't have to bring a lawyer every time you start from scratch, and it must be easily comparable. I think that's mostly the challenge there on the investment side. Behind the meter and for remote power systems in very remote settings, for example, I think the challenge is more technical, that you need long duration storage that's also not very temperamental, in the sense that it can tolerate high temperatures, for example. Some of the batteries we have today, when you stop cooling them for a day or two, they actually degrade. So if you're in a remote setting, the cooling fails and you don't get this repaired immediately, your whole asset may devalue. And we need to get to technologies that are a bit more tolerant of high temperatures, that don't need that much maintenance, so they really function 24/7 all year round in a remote setting.
Great. Now that's really helpful. So I know that you work closely with investment officers and sort of advise them on the technical side with the business consideration. So what advice would you give to project developers or Canadian project developers that are looking to work with IFC? And can you sort of walk through, at least broadly, what the process is like? I know we've had a chance to talk to a few Canadian companies, and you've talked to them one-on-one. So I just want to get a sense on what these companies should expect when working with the IFC.
Well, we behave very much like a commercial lender, in the sense that we apply commercial criteria. We just have a higher appetite for emerging market risk. And so you should expect an interaction comparable to any project lender. So we apply commercial criteria. We, in energy storage, for example, because it's a relatively young category, we'd be looking for technically de-risked projects, in the sense that they don't try to push the envelope too far in a technical manner, but, for example, use tier one suppliers, use tried and tested battery systems and power electronics and software that has been used in a number of megawatt scale projects before. And this is not the time to try and experiment with something new. It's the time to apply financing to what works. And I think that's what we'd be looking at.
Okay. But a general question overall is, with COVID over the last year, how has that affected your work and IFC's ability to invest?
So let's look at two sides. So on the market side, I think the market barely skipped a beat. We maybe lost two quarters of growth in energy storage, but by the end of 2020, we were back on the original growth path. So that's good news, and that the market has taken this in its stride and now has processes to work even remotely. And for us, from the IFC side, we've been getting better at conducting a project appraisals remotely, for example, working with local video recording, reducing the need for travel. And that's taken a couple of quarters too. But I think now we've got the processes in place to keep investing at the same pace as we did pre-COVID.
Good. That's encouraging, because I know I get a lot of questions on, is IFC still investing with COVID, and the fact that they can't travel, is that stopping investments? But it sounds like everyone's adapted, and
yes,
IFC included. Can you run me through some case studies or some examples of investments in energy storage where you really find some exciting innovation, or where you're just overall excited about for IFC?
So all of the opportunities we're seeing, they address that fundamental driver that we want more renewables on a grid. And the most immediate opportunity are island systems, because on an island, often you have megawatts of diesel generators running, and the diesel fuel is so expensive that energy will cost you 20, 25 cents per kilowatt hour. And batteries and solar together compete with that without any subsidies. Especially if you're pragmatic, if you don't try to eliminate the diesel generator entirely, because that ends up with a very large battery. If you think about it, if you always have to cover even three days of bad weather that may occur only every 5 years, you end up with a very large battery that's hardly ever used. But if you keep some diesel for backup, then you can work with a reasonably sized battery and the cost is very competitive. So island systems are immediately competitive. The second variation we see is grids that have a lot of solar and wind and then get a little bit out of whack, get a little bit out of frequency, and then add a standalone battery to adjust the frequency. And we've seen that work before. Incidentally, for example, in West Berlin, we had a large lead acid battery back in the 1980s when West Berlin was an island in eastern Germany that regulated the frequency on the grid. And then in the United States, they've been doing that for a decade now. So, and a number of our emerging markets that we work in now get to that point where adding storage helps adjust the frequency a bit. But I'm most excited, and that will be the end game, of adding solar and wind with 4, 5, 6 hours of batteries to fill the batteries during the day. Often, you know, peak solar generation is in the early afternoon, and then use your 4, 5, 6 hours in the evening when the peak occurs. In many hot weather markets, the peak is in the evening when people get home and crank up the air conditioning, and that can be addressed with the energy you generated during the day. And we see some of that happening in emerging markets now, and there will be much more of that over the next few years.
Great. Looking at emerging markets and in this $1 billion initiative that the World Bank has launched, could you tell us more about the initiative and where you see the impact would be the most significant in emerging markets?
So the World Bank initiative, as opposed to the IFC, which works in the private sector, works with government and government-backed entities. Mm-hmm. And they support entities, for example, the Solar Energy Corporation of India is a client of the World Bank that develops renewable energy projects on behalf of the Indian states. And the World Bank supported a pilot project for wind solar battery hybrid that's planned to be built in India. I think it's a good example of how these pilot projects generate the capacity, for example, in adjusting regulation, in setting standards, to execute storage projects in the market. And then hopefully the idea is that once that pilot has been done, there will be more projects in the market that can be privately financed. That's when we call that the cascade, that within the World Bank Group, that you begin with public sector projects that set a precedent, and then the private sector comes in and ramps up and does a second and third and fourth project.
Okay, great. And I think it's important to note, which I didn't note at the beginning, that IFC is part of the World Bank Group, but is the private investment arm of the World Bank. So they work hand in hand with the World Bank, but the World Bank, as it's colloquially, or the World Bank as it's known, provides funding to sovereign funding.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important to note. The other thing to note, and you sort of touched on it a little bit, and maybe you can comment on it, is the availability of pilot funding for different systems. The World Bank and IFC doesn't do pilot funding, except on a very limited competitive basis. So what is your sense of how Canadian companies or companies in general can access some of that softer funding in energy storage?
Pilot funding and also grants for pilots, that's very much what the World Bank does. That's what the public sector part of the World Bank Group does. We at IFC, we don't provide pilot funding. We have a high appetite for showing to the private sector that a new kind of project, a new kind of technology is open for prime time. So we sometimes do a first of a kind project. We may in some cases bring in what we call blended finance that makes a project that's almost financially viable but not quite get over the hump. If it's a first of a kind in a region, that's what we can do at IFC. But we don't do grants for pilot as such.
Great. And that's a great plug because we'll be interviewing some of your blended finance colleagues for this podcast soon.
That's great. Please tell them we need more blended finance for our batteries.
I will. So thank you so much, Peter, for your time and for walking us through energy storage. I think you've provided us with a wealth of information, and it really sort of helped Canadian companies understand what to expect when working with the IFC.
Great. Thanks for having me. It was so good to see you again, Fahim.
Yeah, you too. All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.